Hello, I'm Paola and welcome to A Contemplative Revolution, a podcast by the WCCM about what it means to live a contemplative, spiritual and Christian life while still playing an active role in our modern world. Join us for conversations with fellow contemplatives in action from around the globe. Listen to Kim Nataraja in her first talk of Who Am I? Dancing with Your Shadow online retreat, in which she explored the images we have of ourselves and what stops us from seeing the true image that we were born with. We hope you enjoy this podcast.
In this retreat, Kim will be asking us to reflect upon the most important question of life. Do we know who we are? And are we, who am I? And are the answers that we may have formulated or formed within our psyches, within our habits of mind, as images of ourselves, are they right? And can they be actually blocks to real self-knowledge? Self-knowledge is the basis of our knowledge of God, as Kim will explain, and so vital that we have true self-knowledge and not false ideas, false images. And of course, she has a deep insight as of meditation as a way to open insight deeper than those blocked images into who we are and why we are and how to be who we are. And I think she exemplifies Father John's insight in her teaching when he says that meditation is the way that we come to accept the gift of our being. Self-acceptance is the basis of this transformation process. So Kim has many friends, including Evagrius and Carl Jung, and she will be introducing them to express and enrich her own insights in these coming talks. So Kim, we are really hungry and looking forward to what you can share with us. Thank you for all that you are and all that you are doing for the community, and thank you for this retreat in particular. And to paraphrase the Desert Fathers, Mother, give us a word. Thank you, Kim. Welcome.
Thank you. Well, I'd like to start with a prayer by an American meditator, I think, Edward Hayes. And he said, as I prepare to go about my work today, may my intention to live in your present moment be the pattern for this day and my life. With your help, may I forever do only one thing at a time, always in communion with you, my beloved, with all my heart, mind, and soul. Well, welcome to this retreat. If you think it's new for you, so it is for me. So we're all beginners, as we're always saying in meditation. I call this retreat, Who Am I? But I also could have called it, Who Are You? In trying to understand ourselves better and realizing who we truly are, we also grow in the understanding of others and become more compassionate, because we also grow in the understanding of God, who is love. we become aware of our interconnectedness. We don't just read about it or hear about it, but we become aware of our interconnectedness and that we share the same essential nature. And this is the journey we'll be making during this retreat. We will move from the rational, egocentric self and who we think we are to our intuitive, spiritual self in Christ, which will show us who we, others, and God truly are. And we're all at different stages of the journey. But we're all living at the moment in this time of crisis, with not only real concern about climate change, but now the pandemic. And it's not surprising that the atmosphere around us is one of anxiety, uncertainty, and insecurity. You can feel it around you. And on top of that, you're deprived of human contact and feel so isolated. And if we didn't know it before, it certainly made us now realize how important relationships are in our life. There may be times when it all seems so meaningless. And that is the one thing we find impossible to tolerate. We yearn for meaning in order to make sense of the world we live in. What we take for the whole of our being, our rational consciousness, our ego, doesn't know where to turn. It is frustratingly not giving us any answers, because really, there are no clear answers. We are taught a lesson here. We need to learn to live with uncertainty and change. The most important lesson we learn. What is really needed is a radical paradigm shift. And to some extent, when you look around, it is happening. Because there are two things. Either we can see it as a threat to our accustomed materialistic lifestyle, which is therefore to be resisted, and insist on return to normal. Or we can take it as a challenge, a wake-up call to let go of our fear, our deep fear of change, and encouraging us to reassess our way of living, our way of being, into a more and compassionate and spiritual way. And that, I think, is one of the reasons why many more people are drawn to the second choice, as we can see by the growing interest in meditation as a spiritual discipline. Then, after a while, our response changes and becomes, is there anything I can do? What is my purpose and meaning in all this? Well, the first thing we need to do, as Mahatma Gandhi said, be the change you want to see in the world. Be the change you want to see in the world. So the emphasis is therefore on starting with ourselves. Not easy, is it? Questions arise. Well, Why do I have to change? Am I not all right as I am? It's other people that need to change. And if you're telling me that I'm more than I think I am, who do you think I am then really? Or who am I really without both of us thinking? Well, one thing we realize is that more material success can't be the answer. It is an important aspect of life, but we feel it's not really adequate to meet the situation we find ourselves in now. The thought soon occurs, surely we were created for something more serious than just day-to-day survival. We're not people that have to live just on the surface. But is there more than the surface? For me, and probably all of you, it is meditation that helps us on this journey of discovering meaningful answers. The first benefit we discover, both from meditation and mindfulness, if you've started that path first, is that it helps us to deal with present-day stresses and anxieties better. And we need that. And that's good. But we soon realize that there is much more to meditation. Although Descartes said, I think, therefore I am, making thoughts the foundation of our existence, and most of us, and many of us, still believe Descartes, we have still be ourselves, may already have experienced that even when at times when thoughts have faded into the background, we still exist. And often it is a fear people have when they start meditation. Do I really have to leave my thoughts behind? Do I then still exist? Well, you find out you do. You then discover you are more than you think you are. Well, here John Maine comes to the rescue. He points out quite a different perspective than the one we're used to looking at ourselves, namely this one. Jesus has sent his spirit to dwell within us, making all of us temples of holiness. God himself dwelling within us. We know that we share in the nature of God. And that's quite a statement. A beautiful one. And we can only discover the truth of this statement, as Father John and Father Lawrence always stress, by experience, the experience that meditation leads us to. That experience is the one that will help us to recover the awareness of that significant divine part of our being. We then know, we really know in an intuitive way that there is something in the deeper eternal self of a human being, not in the personal ego, which is similar and even identical with divine reality. And this divine reality is the ground of our individual being, and not just of us, but of others, and of the whole of humanity, the whole of creation, animate or inanimate. And through that, we are all one. This wonderful sense of oneness we can experience. We are part of a web of life. So when I said we feel isolated, that is only a perception. It's not the truth. And you think, oh, this all sounds very good, but sounds like hard work. What will I have to do to achieve this? Well, I've got good news. There is nothing to achieve. We just have to return to who we always have been. What do I mean by that? Well, let me tell you a story. Some of you may have heard it before, but it is worth hearing again. When I was doing a retreat in Florida for Jean Bibo many years ago, we had a very nice discussion. And afterwards, a lady came up to me and said, I'm sorry to disturb you, but I don't really like talking in public. But after what you said, I need to tell you this story. My daughter had a little boy, about 3 years old he is now. And my daughter had a little baby, a little girl, recently. And so one day, this little boy came up to my daughter and said, Mummy, very seriously, Mummy, I have to talk to the baby. And she said, you have to talk to the baby? He said, yes. She said, well, if you have to, go and do it then. And she stood near the door, just in case. But she saw this boy lean over the baby, and the baby was smiling and quiet, and he seemed to be talking to her. My daughter couldn't hear. And after a while, he came out. So she said, well, it looked you were having a good conversation. What was it about? And he said, he looked at her and said, I asked her what God is like, because I'm forgetting. And that's also what we slowly, slowly over time have been forgetting. But the ones who never forget are the poets amongst us. William Wordsworth, one of my favorite poets, said, our birth is but a sleep and a forgetting. The soul that rises with us, our life star, hath elsewhere its setting, and cometh from afar, not in entire forgetfulness, not in utter nakedness, but trailing clouds of glory Do we come from God, who is our home? Heaven lies about us in our infancy. Ode to immortality. Well, how much we can learn from children. No wonder Jesus said, unless you turn round and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom. The kingdom, the presence of God. So let me talk a bit about why I think Jesus said that. The first quality of children is their unquestioning, loving trust. It's beautiful. Secondly, they have a one-pointed focus. When young children are at play or busy with anything, it's amazing how they focus their attention one-pointedly on what they're doing at that moment. I would call my children. They didn't hear me. They weren't being naughty. They were just totally engrossed in what they were playing with or what they were doing. No multitasking here. And Alan will show you picture one that shows us the difference between us and children. Perhaps we're not like that anymore. Perhaps we were only like that before we started meditating. But we were trying to keep our attention while multitasking. Perhaps the television or radio on in the background and us talking on the telephone. Well, I assure you that lady is going to fall off that wire. And so do we. So the one-pointed attention is what we need. Thirdly, they are totally in the present moment. If you offer them a treat, but say, I'm sorry, not now, but in a few months' time, they look quite disappointed. Our granddaughter, Zoe, who is now 6 years old, said, when are we going to see Oma and Opa? They used the Dutch expression. And my son said, soon, not now, but definitely in a few months' time. And she looked very disappointed. The next morning, she was sitting in a carton box. I have the picture. And she told my son, well, you can always send me to Oma and Opa now. And that's it. They enjoy only what is here and now. Our son did not send her and said to her, I can't put chocolate in the box, so it isn't a good idea. Well, something in the future means nothing to them. They enjoy what is here and now. They see, they hear, they smell, they touch everything that is around them with such joy. We, on the other hand, may spend so much time planning ahead, desiring, fearing, that the present moment has slipped away altogether. But we don't just miss the present moment, do we also then miss God, who is in the here and now always? Fourthly, they are very intuitive. If you're feeling upset about something and they come in, they look at you, say nothing, but creep on your lap or just give you a big cuddle. They know. They're very aware of other people's feelings. So these qualities of trust, one-pointedness, staying in the present moment, are all the qualities we need for prayer and meditation, especially trust and one-pointed attention. If we do that, then we automatically stay in the present moment, letting go of thoughts of past and present. And Alan will show you picture 2, which helps you there. Because meditation, said Father John, is coming to stillness at the center of our being. And in meditating, we have to learn to become wholly inserted into the now of the present moment, to say our word with pure attention. And that is all. That's all you have to do. Nothing to achieve. So, what I've said is really the implication of all this is that we can return to this original consciousness we see in children if we temporarily switch off the ego with its internal thoughts. Just temporarily, we do need the ego. In fact, what we're doing is listening to Jesus. Leave self behind. Leave the egocentric self behind. And then we will become aware of what first, when we were young children, was an unconscious state. Interconnectedness with the divine ground of our being, but now we know it consciously. So it's not a regression, it is transcendence. Now I come to something that can help us, namely neuroscience and the role the brain functions can help us understand the reason for this return to who we were, are, and always will be. Let me first of all lay my cards on the table. I don't believe the nothing but scientist who believe that it is the brain that produces consciousness. That is to me as, what is the word, as daft as saying that the music that you hear is produced by the radio. And I have backing the neurosurgeon Wilbur Penfield has written a wonderful book, The Mystery of Mind. And he states very clearly that consciousness does not originate in the brain. And I'll share with you an interesting anecdote I wrote quite a while ago in the Time magazine. It was an article by a Dr. Scott Haig called The Power of Hope. One of his patients had an inoperable brain tumor and was slowly dying. His family were around him, but he wasn't aware of them. He wasn't aware of anything. Let me highlight the most interesting aspect of this article. The moment the doctor came into the room where the man and his family was, the nurse came running up to him and said, "He woke up, you know, doctor, just after you left. And he said goodbye to them all, like I am talking to you right here, like a miracle. He talked to them, patted them, smiled for about 5 minutes. And then he went out again and passed away in the hour." The doctor remarked, "But it wasn't David's brain that woke him up to say goodbye that Friday. His brain had already been destroyed. Tumor metastasis don't simply occupy place and press on things, leaving a whole brain. The metastases actually replace tissue. Where that gray stuff grows, the brain is just not there. And yet, he said goodbye to them all, smiling, patting, and talking to his family. So this means to me very much that definitely we can talk about a field of consciousness that far extends our skin boundary. And I'm glad to say that the quantum scientist David Bohm agrees and goes even further and says, deep down, the consciousness of humanity is one. Some of you may know our daughter Shanida, who has a doctorate in neuroscience. And after she had been doing postdoctoral research at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, she came back home and said to me, "What do you think is the most important aspect of meditation, Mom?" And I smiled and I said, "Attention?" She said, "You don't know how right you are." And she'll explain that in a minute. And she agrees. When I asked her, she agrees totally with the scientist who stressed that the brain is not the originator of consciousness, but instead a beautiful instrument to access different levels of reality. And that is why we have two hemispheres in our brain that each have a specific function to access different fields of consciousness. This is not my knowledge, folks. This is what I learned from Shanida. Alan will show us picture 3. The There's your brain. You didn't know it looked like that, did you? Well, let me tell you a bit more about it. The left hemisphere is the domain of the conscious part of our being, the one we're familiar with, the ego. Can you see how organized, how we're all doing things in little boxes, isolated, concentrating on doing? Well, that is because the left hemisphere with the ego is actually our king or queen of survival. It's rational, logic, and language-based, very important, language-based. It's sometimes called the interpreter, selecting from the information coming from our surroundings that which will help our survival and our functioning in the world. Ignoring everything that does not fit in to our slowly conditioned worldview. But I don't call it an interpreter. I call it a spin doctor, because the story it builds up is not necessarily true. It only serves its survival purpose. And not only that, then we have the impression that we are in control. So we identify with that part of our being. Now the right hemisphere, which is the oldest part of our brain, also has a center. And that center we often call the true self. It's non-verbal, not language-based at all. It's intuitive, insightful, creative, and spiritual. And in fact, there is our connection to God, to divine reality. From there, ET can phone home. And so can we. Now, Shanita states, our brain contains hardwiring that allows us to experience both higher states of consciousness, and an all-pervading unity that can be equated to God. You can hear that she's a scientist that can be equated to God. The right hemisphere, with its link to divine reality, and through our sharing in that part with Christ consciousness, is in fact the source of our original sense of wholeness and totality. And then it is the unifying factor of both consciousness, the left brain, and unconsciousness. And the ego, the consciousness, evolved out of the right brain. And if you look carefully at the picture, you will see bridges, and we need bridges between the right brain and the left brain. Can you see the right brain with its joy, its connection with nature, with other people, with perhaps the silence, but relationships, people crossing over the bridge together? And you know, the secret is of meditation that the more you meditate, the more bridges there are between your left brain the left hemisphere and your right one. And so you easily move from one to the other, whatever you need. But it's meditation that creates the bridges. And children, right up to about 2 years old, operate totally still from the right brain. Hence the story of the toddler and the baby. Roughly from 2 years on, the ego starts its development out of the matrix. Do remember that, out of the matrix of the right hemisphere. And Alan will show us how that works, how it develops from right, it slowly evolves out of left, picture four. So picture four is taking its time to come, just like the ego takes its time to grow out of the right hemisphere. So you see the self, this is Michael Fordham, new developments in analytical psychology. So you see the ego and the self are one. Slowly, the ego moves out further, becomes more and more independent, like a child, leaving home, and finally is separate. But there is the big bridge, and we need that bridge. We need that bridge badly, because otherwise, we would not be able to verbalize what we experienced. The right brain is nonverbal and needs the left brain to make sense of what happened. The right one gives the insights, meaning, and purpose, and a longing towards wholeness. An impetus towards bridge building. And the left one then tries to put into language what the right one knows intuitively. And it helps us to operate in the world as a whole being. So remember, both are important. We don't want to get rid of the ego. We just temporarily would like the ego to go into the background so we can keep the connection going. But the society we live in and some materialist scientists emphasize that the left hemisphere is the important one and ignore the value of the right one. Well, Albert Einstein, another friend of mine, sums it up beautifully. The intuitive mind is a sacred gift and the rational mind is a faithful servant. We have created a society that honors the servant, but has forgotten the gift. Intuition in our society is often brushed aside as mere feelings, but it is the voice of our spiritual self. So let's look at picture five, because that shows us how meditation is crucial to learning to understand our true nature. It's back to focused attention, trust. and the intention to remember. Focused attention prompts a shift from the left brain, where we are normally, to the right brain. We predominantly use our left brain. Attention is a right brain function. Focused attention promotes the shift from left to right brain. We also have attention in our left brain, but it is a different type of attention. But the main center is in our right hemisphere. And Shanida points out, this is left brain is rational, analytical, and logical. And the right brain deals abstract terms, holistic, intuitive, and we know spiritual. So it is the one-pointed attention. Not surprising, John Main always said, just say your word. Doesn't matter if you lose it every second, just have the intention to come back and say it. So the right hemisphere links us automatically into this intuitive, spiritual self. Intuitive way of knowing. An intuitive way of being connected into a wider cosmic and spiritual divine whole. Don't believe the ego, and do remember the ego is not a thing, it's part of our consciousness. Don't believe him when they say that we're only a separate identity. Einstein again puts it beautifully. A human being is a part of a whole, called by our scientists the universe. A part limited in time and space. He experiences himself and his thoughts and feelings as something separate from the rest, a kind of optical delusion of consciousness. Well, the spiritual path we are all on in at different stages is to bring these complementary aspects of our being together, integrating them and letting one infuse the other. So we are much more than we think we are. And Alan will show that to us in picture 6. Those of you who may not know the book of Winnie the Pooh, one of their books all English children are brought up with. And he says, Christopher Robin, the main character, says to Winnie the Pooh, promise me you'll always remember that you're braver than you believe, stronger than you seem, and smarter than you think. And that's what we do when we meet in groups and meditate together. We encourage one another. And we say, you're okay, that's fine. You're much more than you think you are. Because experiencing this sense of connectedness with the divine reality, even in glimpses, also increases our compassion for other people, our care for our whole environment and our whole earth. How the world would change if only more of us meditated and discovered the whole of our being. As I've often said during these past 15 months, meditation, contemplative prayer could save the world. But let me finish with the words of Father John Main. I could use all the words in our vocabulary to tell you about the eternal silence of God that dwells in our innermost being, the silence of pure creation. I could say how important that silence is, because in it you hear your own name spoken clearly and unmistakably for the first time. You come to know who you are. Yet all these words would fail to convey the experience itself, an experience of unselfconscious liberty in the creating presence of God. Thank you for listening. And sometime today, you might like to read the story, which is on the website, Your True Name. And there's something else I'd like you to do. I'd like you to make a list to yourself of who am I? Often I do this in sort of twos, but I don't think that works in our modern one. But ask yourself the question, who am I? And just write down one or two phrases, words. Then you ask again, who am I? Write down something different. And again, who am I? Till you finally run out of words to put on your list. And that list will show you who you are. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast. You can subscribe to the Contemplative Revolution podcast and listen to your favorite podcast app. In the media section of the WCCM website, wccm.org, you can also find a large amount of video and audio content on meditation. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.